7FM. It's time now for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
It'll be a sad moment for many who attended and taught in this building over the years. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. History of this building actually reaches back long before its construction in 1955. Its teacher's college was established in 1925, eventually moved to Carruthers Hall by the mid-1950s, and eventually that was shut down in 1969. Since then, the building has been used to house the Salisbury University's ComArts Department as well as Delmarva Public Radio. Take a look back at this history in our studio this morning. David Ranson, he is the Salisbury University archivist, also Ruth Bennett, a former teacher, and Jane Burt, a former student. And well, welcome to the program. David, I want to start with you. Give us a little historical background. As I said, it indicated that this thing actually reaches back to 1925, and I believe it was William James Holloway who actually established. Tell us a little bit about that history.
Sure. When the decision was made to have a normal school here at Salisbury, the concept of an elementary school was in the plans for the building. So Holloway Hall was built with an elementary school on the back end of it, and in 1925, when the campus school when the Holloway Hall began, elementary school opened as well. So they had 61 pupils there, and only first grade, second grade, and third grade was taught the first year. And it ran all the way up to 1955 when they moved over to what it would be Carruthers Hall, which was they called it first the demonstration school, and that's basically it's been just two places. It's been on the back end of Holloway Hall, and here at Carruthers Hall. Yes.
Now, I understand that there had been plans, I think, expand from 4 to 6 grades and so on. But then in the 1930s, there were some cutbacks. And tell us a little bit about that interim history there, 30s and 40s.
Well, because of the Depression and, of course, World War II, there was problems with funding. But because the unit, well, it became the teacher's college back then, they knew that the importance of a demonstration school or a practical school was important for the well-being of the students to learn the right skills in a controlled environment was so important for that next step when you did go to your own professional position. That they fought very hard to keep it alive and well. And you have Pauline Rael, who became the principal. You also had, before that, of course, Thomas Carruthers, who was the director of the director of the education department. They really fought to make sure that there was this environment for the students to learn the right way, how to teach young students, young children in the educational process, basically.
I want to turn, by the way, to Pauline, because she is real, because she is sort of this pivotal figure. I mean, she starts out as a teacher, but then she winds up as a principal, basically, until she retires. Tell us a little about who she was and what kind of impact that she had on the school.
Well, she was a local. She came from Tiaskin, and when she graduated from in 1917 from Nanticoke High School, and wanted to be a teacher, and that was her life. And so, when she graduated in 1917, she decided to do that. She would go over across the Chesapeake Bay and take classes at the normal school at Towson. When I assume she got what would basically would be the associate's degree, she came back to the Eastern Shore and she taught at Tiaskin schools. She also taught down in Fruitland and Willard's. And while she was there, James Bennett, the superintendent of Wicomico County Schools, basically picked her out and said, you should teach at the normal school. And that 1929, she started, I believe it's the third and fourth grade, she started teaching at the normal school. And she stayed until she retired in 1969. And that's when the campus school closed as well. So,
and what kind of person was she?
They would probably know, okay. the other guests that would probably know better. But her life was teaching, and her life was the children. There's a lot of articles that have been written about her saying that because she never married, she was so devoted to the children, to teaching, that that's became her life. So, yeah.
Okay, I want to turn to Ruth Bennett. You are a former teacher. When did you teach?
I started in 1955 and was there till it was closed.
Until it closed. So what was Pauline like?
She was a good principal. There was fun, but there was no foolishness. And in some of these articles I have, there was a quote, she lived, slept, and ate education. I mean, that school and those children were her life.
Give me a sense of her. I mean, is there some incident, some story that comes out that illustrates about who she was or encounter? Or...
I can't think of anything right now.
Yeah. And she was, and how did she interact with the students a lot? Or?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Very much. She did not stay in her office. No, she was all over the building every day.
Jane Chambert, you were a former student also, I understand, a former student of Ruth Bennett, right? Is that correct? Okay. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But but tell me your own sense about Pauline. And did you see her much, or what was that like?
She was out in the hallways all the time. She was there. You felt her presence if you didn't see her. But I saw her out in the hallways, walking up and down. And, I mean, they had a book fair one time, and it was in her office. And she was very involved with talking to students about what they were interested in, because I mean she spent some time with me, and my father said you may pick out one book, so she helped, and we picked out a book which I still have to this day, because it was the first book I had ever owned that was purely mine. But I felt, you know, she was there talking and interacting with the students. There were some students who probably weren't jumping up and down about her, but
Ooh, was she tough?
She knew what she wanted, and you stuck to it. Mm-hmm.
So what was it like being a student during that period? I mean, what do you remember from about this building, which is now going to be coming down pretty soon?
I know, which is kind of scary. I remember the gym being, you know, this nice gym. I remember when the auditorium was built. I remember going outside and playing on the playground, and there were swings, and we made hopscotch things. And but I felt I got a good education. I had a lot of different teachers, some more receptive to us as students than others, but that's human nature. But I just remember this being a very calming place, a very nice place to be. And we did have student interns, and I remember public television came on at that when I was in third grade, and we had French.
Oh.
Yeah, we had French. We took French from, Mrs. Seabreeze brought in the TV, and we turned on the TV and watched and learned a little bit of French in the process. So it was kind of interesting. But I remember this building being very nice. So...
And Ruth, what do you remember about the building? What did this, walking these halls and?
It was always a very warm building. Mm-hmm. I will say the atmosphere was warm, and most of the faculty knew almost the names of almost all the children, no matter what grade. And if a new one came in, you would learn that name to go with the others from that class.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked well together and mixed up the grades to do some things. At that time, I was with kindergarten, and Mrs. Brady, who was first grade, we were down there at the other end together, just those two rooms. And we put them all together a lot of times to do things. This playground Jane was speaking of is now the parking lot.
I'm afraid that happens to a lot.
And I think this was the auditorium.
Oh, okay, because we now had, or we had another auditorium, actually, that they expanded here, right, mm-hmm. right. And how did, what was it like teaching here? I mean, in terms of the kinds of students that you got, I mean, do you remember them? I mean, obviously you remember them.
I remember we had very interested, caring, concerned, helpful parents. Mm. For the majority. You're going to have any place that you don't have some of those, but the majority would do anything that you ever asked them to do, which was a wonderful support system, whether it was catching up on homework or making Halloween costumes.
So was this a fairly then closely knit kind of community then?
Yes.
At the time you were teaching then? And did you teach a lot of people who then went on to become prominent in the local community?
Probably. I'm not naming names.
Oh, you hope so.
Well, one of the things, by the way, one of the things I want to get back to you, David, is that, yeah. that prior to moving here, obviously, there was a Norman Crawford, who was president, and he tried to move the school into the sort of a grade, non-grade kind of issue. Can you explain a little bit about what was going on with him? I think it was like in the 30s, I think it was.
Oh, no. Crawford was the president of the 70s.
Of the 70s, I'm sorry. Yeah, 70s. So to explain that a little to me about his idea about not sort of moving away from this sort of grade business that he was talking about.
Oh, and this was more to do with the college in general.
Yeah.
There was a new idea happening where you didn't really want to worry too much about grades. It was more to do with positive reinforcement. So that was basically what he was trying to get at. And he still does to this day. When you meet him, he'll bring up his whole big, let's move away from grades, let's move away from taking the SATs, that kind of stuff, to try to figure out what, how can you develop a child, how can be a student to the best of their abilities without putting that A, putting that B, putting that C in there. That was his big push. Kind of didn't. He's still trying to be the champion of that idea. But
So I mean, I'll ask you. So, as a teacher, what do you think about that idea? Or do you think that students really need grades? They really need to know where they're at.
I think they need grades.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. Even in second grade, they know what they're doing, whether they're in this group or this group or this group. And I think the grades are reinforcement to advance.
Mm-hmm. And Jane, what do you think about that? I mean, obviously you had grades, so you couldn't get out of it.
I did, and I've also been a teacher.
Oh, okay.
So I've
yeah. So how does that sense? What sense do you have about
and
that?
And I've had both sides, and I don't know. I think grades are good in some respects. I remember sitting in the campus school and sitting down with my teacher and saying, "What grade do you think you deserve?" And I would find that very hard because I was not self-confident enough to say, "I deserve an A," because I just wasn't that. I was more of a C, you know. So I don't know.
Your own mind, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, it's kind of tough. I don't know. A lot of pressure is put on grades these days, and I'm not sure for some students if it doesn't just make them go cringe inside, but to do without grades totally, I'm not sure.
How do you judge him, if you can? Well, I'll go first, but can you get any sense about what students say were like then as opposed to now? I mean, is there some substantial difference, or do you think they're basically the same, even though obviously the culture has changed and we have social media and everything? But, I mean, and this was obviously a smaller community in many ways. I mean, it was not as the city and the county was not as large.
I think that, of course, this school was approximately 200 children.
Right.
Which, compare that to any of the elementary schools now, which could be 500 or 600. Mm-hmm. So that makes a difference right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you think the students themselves are different?
Mm-hmm. I haven't been in a school
for a while, and I
couldn't say.
Yeah. What would you say?
I say the students. I'm not so sure it's the students so much as the parental support for education. I think you've got students that are very interested, and then you've got students that aren't. And, I mean, even the campus school when I went, I think there were students who were, I'm here to get an education, and then there were students who, you know, really may have said, I'm here, but I know I have to go to school, and I, you know.
But it's also the mindset, too, because probably back then you had one income coming in, so the mothers usually stayed home. Mm-hmm. Nowadays you have the two-parent income, so children, I have two young ones, and one's in second grade, and you see a lot of independency with the children. You know, they make their own breakfast, lunch, and dinners sometimes, just because the parents are working so much.
And that's very true.
And it's a little bit more, because when I went in the 70s and the 80s, and my mother was always home. And I remember when I got home, there would be someone there. Sometimes that doesn't, well, I say majority now, a lot of times it doesn't happen that much. So they have to take care of themselves more. So there's a different mindset.
Right, but I also think parental support.
Oh, and of course that too as well, yes.
Yeah, because there are parents out there who are like, I'm sending my kid off to school, just go. And they do what they want. And then they don't care what that child's doing at school, you know, and unless the child is motivated. And there's your independence again, they're motivated. And so.
Do you think the closeness of this community contributed to, aside from the fact that you obviously did have actually only one earner, single earner, just the closeness of the community alone? I mean,
yeah, I think it had a lot to do with it. There was a community feeling in Salisbury at that time, and in neighborhoods. I mean, we played games out in the middle of the street, and the whole neighborhood was there. You know, and I'm not sure that would be found today.
And then there's of course, before its closure, there was discussion about integration. And I think one point, I think 1969, there were like three black students, I guess it was, that obviously began to increase. And I guess it was Governor Spiro Agnew, actually, and I think they actually closed it down. But tell me, first of you, David, tell me a little bit about that history. What was going on? Because we're coming out, particularly the late 1960s, we're looking at the civil rights movement in full swing, lots of integration. So how did the school play this role? And I mean, how did that affect the school?
Well, the big thing for the closing of the school was more to do with funding. Uh-huh. They were trying to, Agnew was trying to basically balance the budget, and he found out that there was what he called wasted money happening, because there were other campus schools all over the state. So he basically cut the funding. So that was the real lead into the campus closing. But then, of course, you the rumors talk that this was a white school. And same thing with this area. There's a split between the blacks and the whites. And they finally got to the point of saying, okay, it's time. We need to start bringing everyone together. And the rumor has it that a lot of people didn't want to do that in the campus school because it was controlled by the university. So trying to make it more of a private school. Again, it's rumor. There's never been any documentation on it, but a lot of people have said that because of the funding problem, which Delibes and even Pauline Rael, they fought as hard as they could. Well, first of all, because Pauline, she was the main force of getting the campus school built. Right. They knew that it was important for the university to have a campus school for the student teachers. So a lot of stuff came at one time, and they finally, you know, they basically just said, no, we have to close the school, and the whole community was changing. So that's how basically the end of the campus school, as I can see it, I mean, you were involved. That's kind of what happened. There's no funding, trying to find the funding. And then because of the society changing with the integration, an era had to end. So that's what basically what happened.
Ruth, yeah, what do you remember about the period? Yeah.
There was some integration. There were a few.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But they fit in, but again, they were caring parents. Mm-hmm. So the parents made sure that they were going to fit in here.
Mm-hmm.
And it just wasn't funded. That was the end of it. And I think there was one of the demonstration schools, I think it was Towson, that was kept open, and the mm-hmm. others in all the state schools were closed.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
As they moved towards closing it, I mean, what were your own feelings? What was the reaction of the staff? What was that like? I mean, I can imagine it was fairly tumultuous, I guess. I mean,
well, the fourth, fifth, and sixth grade ended in June of 68,
mm-hmm.
and K through three was 69, and it was something about how much notice you had to give. The fourth, fifth, and sixth grade teachers were absorbed in the education department. They were still here for a year. Some of them stayed after that when there were mm-hmm. space for them, and some didn't. We just wondered where we were going the next year.
That's a good question.
Several of them retired.
Right, right. And did it ever? I mean, obviously you taught here a long time. Did it strike you? I mean, did it strike you odd that there wasn't integrated, or I mean, what was that? Did people think about that at the time?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it was just the way things were.
It never had been so, and it was that last year or 2 years. Why?
Yeah.
Just let's get through this time.
Mm-hmm.
Do the best we can with what we have and march on.
David, I want to turn to you for a moment. I mean, it wasn't a legal issue here in terms of, I mean, prior to this. I mean, they just didn't.
No, no,
they didn't bring them in. I mean,
no, not at all, not at all. Because they had, I mean, there were schools all over the place, so it was still fine. And because this was a teaching school, it was more to do with the students going through the university or the college back then, mm-hmm. more than to do with the students actually going to the campus school. So I would like to know how it was having the college students teaching at the kindergarten class.
I didn't have any student teachers in kindergarten.
Oh, okay.
I had them in second grade.
Okay.
I don't think the kindergarten curriculum was in the college.
Okay.
In the education department at that time. Later, there were some when Mrs. Laurie was teaching kindergarten.
Okay. But because, you know, you always see the pictures that I've been collecting, the pictures, and you see that the student either sitting on the side as the teacher standing up in front. When you started, you knew that you were going to be teaching college students how to be elementary school teachers. How was that to... because you had to deal with also your second graders, mm-hmm. but then you also had to make sure that the students were...
Your class and the student teachers, and you were in the middle.
That's interesting.
True. So, Ruth, when did you go to school here?
From when? From 55 to 62.
62, and did you teach here as well, or did you teach somewhere else? Okay. So what was it like going to school here then? We were talking about how, I mean, it wasn't integrated, but, I mean, was that... Did anybody think about that, the fact that, or was it custom? What was it that you think?
I don't know. I didn't think about it.
Yeah.
I just,
It was just there?
This is where I was going to school, and I just got up and went every day.
Uh-huh.
You know, didn't think about not being any African-American people in the building. I just didn't.
Yeah.
I was 5 years old. I was told to go to school.
Right, right. Now, when you heard about the fact it was closing, what was your own reaction?
Well,
the 69.
Okay, well, in 68, my brother Tom was in sixth grade. Okay. He had to go to Pinehurst for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little bit of an upheaval because he was having to move out of this school and into Pinehurst, which had always been a rivalry. I mean, when we grew up, we lived across the street from Pinehurst. So there was a rivalry. We would have to walk past Pinehurst to get to State Teachers College Campus Elementary School. And so there was a little bit of rivalry between us, the students that went there. I mean, it was a fun rivalry, but it was just a little bit of rivalry. Yeah. And when it closed, it meant Tom was now going, this whole class was now going into whatever public school was near them. So, and Tom happened to go to Pinehurst, and it was kind of fun. He took a little bit of ribbing that year.
Exactly.
But I was in 12th, 11th grade or something, mm-hmm. I just was like, oh my gosh, they're closing the school? I'm saying that now as they're getting ready to tear it down.
That's true. Well, and we'll get to that in a moment, but yes. Yeah. I mean, and what was the community reaction to the idea that they were going to finally close the school in 69? I mean, was there any pushback or was there...
Oh, I would assume there. I assume there's a push. There was pushback.
Mm-hmm.
It was a staple for a good amount of years, 14, and then all the way back to 1925. That you knew that there was a campus school here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people that are still in this area went through that school. Mm-hmm. So even when they found out that they were going to bring this building down to build the new academic commons, you saw a little murmur happening in the community going like, really? I believe what they're going to do with the new building, they're going to try to honor Carruthers Hall in a couple of ways. So hopefully back in the 1960s, 69, and hopefully, this year coming up, there won't be that big of a upheaval.
But by the way, I just want to mention, Sally Crawford, who's the daughter of Norman Crawford, called a few minutes ago and wanted to make it very clear that her father he did believe in grades, but he didn't believe in giving Fs because he felt that the student should get simply a no credit, which I remember hearing about, but rather an opportunity to retake it. I just want to sort of make clear.
But
as
then
well.
I apologize.
It's okay. That's all right. In about a minute or two that we have left here. So what are your own feelings about this building finally coming down? It'll be replaced by a large library, amongst other things. Let me start with you, Ruth. What's your own feeling about it?
I think they've lost something. And I don't understand how the property, the land that this building is on, is big enough for what they're going to put on it. From what I have seen, if they have something in that that memorializes, honors, or this building and its purpose, then they will have continued it.
And what about you, Jane?
I'm sorry to see it go. I taught in the public schools and then came back and I taught children's lit through here. And I was in Carruthers, and it was like going back home again. I went from kindergarten to sixth grade and then came back here to teach children's lit. And then I went into the new building over here, and it's kind of like, wow, they're tearing down my elementary school. I can't say to anyone, that's my elementary school, because it's not going to be here. Which is pretty true.
Anybody plan on buying any bricks from this place? Is that...
It's in my thought. I have it written down.
You have it. Is there a request in for it?
That's through the Alumni Association, right?
Yeah, I think so. As a matter of fact. So, and finally, David, so at this point, I know you have or have had an exhibit, I think, at what is now the current library and so on and so forth. Any thoughts about it? You're the archivist here. I mean, what significance do you think this building has for this university?
Oh, I mean, it was basically a staple of what the university truly is. It's about teaching, learning, you know, and creating and making leaders of the community. And it did that. And it will continue to do that with the Academic Commons as well. It's just
a new beginning, I guess.
It's just a new beginning, or just it's transformation. Mm. And that's basically what it is.
We've been speaking with David Ranson. He's the Salisbury University archivist. Also, Ruth Bennett, a former teacher here at the Carruthers Hall, as well as Jane Burt, who is a former student, matter of fact, former student of hers as well. This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening. Population of the United States is aging, and by 2050, the number of Americans age 65 and older is